الله أكبر الله أكبر أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله حي الصلاة يا على الصلاة حي حي على الفلاح
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على رسوله الكريم سبحانك لا علم لنا إلا ما علمتنا إنك أنت العليم الحكيم ما علمنا ما ينفعنا زدنا علما اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم In a very quoted ayah of the Quran, Allah Ta'ala says, إِنَّمَا يَخْشَ اللَّهَ مِنْ عِلْعُلَمَاءِ الْعُلَمَاء Indeed, those who truly fear Allah Ta'ala are the scholars, are the ulama. Maybe if we've ever attended a judge, might hear this verse, that indeed those who truly fear Allah Ta'ala are the ulama. One of the leading scholars of hadith today, from Syria, Sheikh Muhammad Awama, حفظه Ta'ala, he comments regarding this ayah, saying that that's true. Ayah speak of the ulama, of the scholars, that they're the ones that truly fear Allah Ta'ala. They're the ones that truly recognize Allah Ta'ala. But he said, let's wait a minute. Let's take it back, and let's put this up in the context that it appears in the Quran, the 22nd juz. Allah Ta'ala says, أعوذ من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ألم ترى أن الله أنزل من السماء ماء فأخرجنا به ثمرات مختلفا ألوانها ومن الجبال جدد بيض وحمر مختلف ألوانها وغراب بسود ومن الناس والدواب والأنعام مختلف ألوانه كذلك إنما يخشى الله من عباد ما. So he said, if we are just to speak of this ayah in regards to the virtue of people who engage in a formal study of deen, no doubt it refers to some level. But he said that we be ignoring the context of this ayah. If we look at this ayah, we see that Allah Ta'ala sends down water from the sky. Allah Ta'ala refers to the water cycle. And then through that, Allah Ta'ala gives rise to produce. Then Allah Ta'ala speaks of other things. Allah Ta'ala speaks of the mountains, how mountains have different colors, geology. Allah Ta'ala speaks of animals and the variation within animals, what we would call zoology. So what Sheikh Muhammad comments, and other scholars also, there's also people who study zoology, they study biology, they study geology, and anything else. And then this leads to a greater appreciation for the Creator. They look at the creation of them. They say, Subhanallah, this Rabbana ma khalaqta batila. Allah, this couldn't have come about by chance. Oh Allah, this wasn't random. This begs for a designer. This begs for a creator. So they see creation around them. And through that, their recognition of Allah, they recognize Allah. They gain a greater appreciation of the creator. The grandeur of their heart of Allah Ta'ala in their heart increases through that. So then, after mentioning all types of different things, Allah Ta'ala says, إِنَّمَا يَخْشَ اللَّهَ مِنْ عِبَادِهِ الْعُلَمَاءِ, that indeed those who fear Allah, those who truly fear Allah are the ulama. So of course it can be referring to ulama of deen, ulama of the sharia, no doubt about that. But in addition to that, it can also be referring to ulama, scholars, people who are knowledgeable of other fields as well, even of fields of science. Then Shaykh Awama goes to further comment that what ilm really is, knowledge really is, anything that leads to appreciation, greater recognition, creator, for Allah Ta'ala. So if somebody studies biology, somebody studies chemistry, somebody studies medicine, anatomy, physiology, whatever it is, and this leads to a greater recognition of the Creator, then that's ilm. If somebody studies fiqh, somebody studies usul al-fiqh, somebody studies tafsir or hadith, and that leads to them having a greater appreciation and recognition of Allah Ta'ala, that's also ilm. Of course, that's the main ilm. Now, however, the flip side is also true. If somebody studies fiqh or tafsir or hadith, and na'udhu billah, it leads to arrogance, it leads to them becoming haughty, then that's not ilm. They've misused and misapplied that ilm. Similarly, if somebody didn't understand what Islam's perspective is on science, we understand that Allah Ta'ala encourages us to look at the world. Allah Ta'ala encourages us to analyze the creation, and then through that we can study it. We study it and study it in depth, and that can lead to us having a greater appreciation for Allah Ta'ala. Now, why do we hear that Islam is at with science? Islam are at loggerheads. When you are Muslim, then you have to close your eyes to all reason. This is completely contrary to what Allah Ta'ala says. وَفِي الْأَرْضِ آيَاتُ لِلْمُوقِنِينَ. In the earth around you, in the land, just take a look. They are signs for those who have certainty. وَفُسِكُمْ. Even if you look inside yourself, you study medicine, you study human anatomy. أَفَلَا تُبْصِرُونَ. Do you see? And the word that's used here is a little bit interesting. It's not just afala tam, do you not look, but the word that's used sar, which another word from the root is not just to see but also to have insight as well. Because Muslims look at the creation, and then from this we gain insight into the Creator. Everything calls to a Creator. Now, why do we hear that religion is at odds with science? In reality, it's not at science at all. This is a byproduct of maybe sort of the history that Christianity has, that the Catholic Church had with scientific development. Now, I'll just give one or two examples. In the 1500s, there was a famous scientist by the name of Nicholas Copernicus. He put theory, or he discovered that prior to Nicholas Copernicus, we had thought, society in general, Christians at least, had thought that the earth was the center of the solar system. So the earth does not go to the sun, there, the sun and everything else revolves around the center of the solar system. And everything goes around the sun. كُلٌّ فِي فَلَكٍ يَسْبَحُونَ Everything goes around, everything is in order. So now he realized this. Now he was afraid to publish his, because he knew that he would receive a lot of backlash, church. So he waited over a decade to publish it. And finally, before his death, he said, okay, I'm going to die anyway, let me just publish it. With a lot of addendums, with a lot of caveats, saying that I this with to the Pope, and it could be wrong, things like that. Shortly thereafter, some decades after his death, the church banned his book. And then there was another famous scientist that came, Galileo, in the 1600s. And then he added on to some of Copernicus's theories. He added on to the theory that this is actually the solar system. And now what resulted from Galileo, extreme backlash, extreme opposition. And then he was threatened with things. Either he would be burned fake if he ever dared speak his theories, because they're against the church, I guess. If he's either going to be burned at this, for option number two, he can settle for house arrest. Meaning that he'll just remain confined to his house, not allowed to go anywhere, not allowed to communicate with anyone. So obviously he chose the second option. And his books were banned. Galileo. So now, historically speaking, there's always been some degree of option of the two specific development. So now what did was that onset of the Renaissance. People, society at large, to see a lot of scientific development. They saw that what is holding us from development is church. Religion is what's holding us back from development. So then people began to dismiss religion. Now, had these same figures existed in Islamic history would have put Galileo under house arrest. Why? Because Allah Ta'ala encourages all these things. Allah Ta'ala in the Quran encourages to look into the creation. Because in fact, the father of chemistry, his name is Jabir bin Hayyan, he was a Muslim. Abu Musa al-Khawariz, he's the father of algorithms. He's also a Muslim. Ibn Hayyan, Ibn al-Haytham, he's the father of optics, the father of the scientist, also a Muslim. So Islam provided the groundwork and provided the encouragement for these people to go ahead with their discoveries. And then Islam never banned them. So now we see from this that their Islam odds with science at all. If a person studies, it can often lead to a greater appreciation for the Creator. Now that's our state. In fact, what do you think of the society? The very first word of revelation of that was Iqra. Read. Learn. This is what Islam is. Now, so this is our stance with respect to science. But now we might think that, wait a minute, it's not all that rosy. Why? Because sometimes it seems that there's certain concepts within science that are odds with Islam. So what is our stance with respect to those things? So now what we have to understand is that Allah Ta'ala is the creator of the universe. Allah Ta'ala, us, and Allah Ta'ala also told us how certain things function. Now, this wahi from Allah Ta'ala tells us things that we wouldn't necessarily always be able to reach the same conclusion with our mind. Allah Ta'ala tells us these things. This is our primary source of knowledge. A secondary source of knowledge would be our observation, mushahadat, aqal. These are also second sources of knowledge. They're always going to be set to the primary source of knowledge, which is wahi from Allah Ta'ala. Example. Let's say somebody manufactured a car, and then he wrote a manual describing how it works. So now let's say somebody else didn't read the manual. This is my theory. This is what I'm postulating. That's what he thinks. Now, whose word would hold more weight? The person who manufactured the car himself, or somebody who comes afterwards and is merely theorizing about it, going back? Obviously, the person who manufactured the car himself. His word would hold more weight. Similarly, Allah Ta'ala tells us about the creation. Now Allah Ta'ala also gives us faculties of reason. Allah Ta'ala has given us the faculty of our senses as well. We can observe things. Now, anything we observe, we might observe things regarding the creation of Allah Ta'ala. And maybe we'll come to the right conclusion. Or it might be that Allah Ta'ala has something that we yet don't understand, and then yet reached that. So now, what is our stance with respect to science? So we accept science for the most part, but in some things it might be that science hasn't yet progressed to the understand or to what Allah Ta'ala has told us. It might be that science lacking regards. What is the definition of science? Oftentimes we consider science is truth, truth is science. These two things are completely linked. They're completely congruent. But actually, science is a process that allows you to achieve some knowledge which is verifiable. This is the definition of science. Now, the knowledge that is achieved by science, verifiable, what that also means is that it's falsifiable. If you can verify something, that means that you can prove that it's true. It also means that you can, maybe that it's false as well. Science is false. Scientists always tout that we're discovering so many new things, always improving our theories. That's great. But then what does that necessitate? If proving our theories, that means that the previous theory was perhaps lacking. This is something that we have to understand, the limitation of science. Science is a great tool to allow us to reach conclusions about the creation of Allah Ta'ala. But it's not merely the be all and end all. Why? Because it might be that in most things, of course, maybe a science agree with what Islam says. Maybe there's a few small things in which science hasn't yet reached the Islamic understanding. It hasn't yet reached to it. Its conclusion is still underdeveloped. So now in those things, now if we're those two things are just before us, we have before us what science says, which is an underdeveloped view of the world or the universe. You have what Allah Ta'ala told us, the one who created the universe itself. Now, whose word would hold more weight? Obviously the word of Allah Ta'ala. So now this is something to keep in mind. Now, one thing I wanted to touch on briefly is one topic that we grapple with extensively. We find students in schools, in universities, all over, we grapple with this. It's the theory of So I'll discuss this briefly. Even when I was on the way here today, minutes ago, I saw a billboard that showed the progression of an ape to a human, saying something like adaptation or evolution or something like that. See that this is plastered before us. This is something that trying to get us to believe. Now, what is our stance according to this? What is our stance with respect to this? Because we know that generally Islam approves science, but now our stance to this. Now, as I said, we have to understand that the nusus, the text of the Quran, of hadith, unequivocal on this issue. There's no ambiguity about it whatsoever. Allah Ta'ala in the Quran places, six or more places, discuss creation of Adam alayhi salam. Allah Ta'ala says, وَبَدَأَ خَلْقَ الْإِنسَانِ مِنْ طِينَ. نَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ ape ancestors before. It's not like that. Allah Ta'ala initiated the creation of Adam alayhi salam from mud, from clay. Now Allah Ta'ala, wouldn't it be that Adam alayhi salam was the first homo sapien? He was the first, but then there might have been more homo sapiens, there might have been apes or ancestor of humans before him. Allah Ta'ala says, Inna mathala Isa lahika mathali Adam. Indeed, Isa alayhi salam is like Adam alayhi salam. How so? We know Isa alayhi salam was created miraculously. Isa alayhi salam, Allah Ta'ala created, gave life to him, just from one parent, just from a mother. There was not a father. So Allah Ta'ala says Isa alayhi salam is like Adam alayhi salam. How so? Because Isa alayhi salam came from one parent, he was created miraculously. Adam alayhi salam was actually created even more miraculously, because he was created from no parents. Right? So just like Isa alayhi salam is miraculous, Adam alayhi salam is even more miraculous. So what do we understand? Be that Adam alayhi salam, na'udhu billah, had eight parents. Adam alayhi salam had some higher being some other ancestor like that. No, Adam alayhi salam, Allah Ta'ala created. Allah Ta'ala has told us very clearly what happened with the creation of Adam alayhi salam. So this is what we must understand. Now we discussed our stance. Now let's discuss a few scientific proofs about evolution regarding evolution. So we know very clearly that Allah Ta'ala told us what our stance is. So we don't necessarily need to, necessarily need anything else. But let's look at the system of science itself. So there's a few things that we'll discuss. The first thing is that one thing that biologists, evolutionary biologists say. They say that due to the presence of homologous structures, this line of evolution, evidence for evolution. That means that if we look at different organisms, we see that there's some sort of structural similarity. Long extended fingers that maybe there's just skin over, and then similarly a human has fingers as well. So it's kind of then this is what they say. They say similarity. Due to the presence of similarity, that means that must have come from a common ancestor. Well, let's look at this a little bit. The first thing is that this is not an argument. A logical argument is one that leads to a conclusion necessarily. There can only be one conclusion from that and nothing else. But this is not an argument. Why? Because similarity can be explained by many things. They explain it by comment. All these organisms, they have similar structure, must have had a common ancestor. It can also be explained by kind. The common creator that created all these things, so the designer is one. So the designer can put somewhat of similar structure in these different organisms. So that's one thing. Another thing is that evolutionary biologists, they say that if we look at the fossil record, there must have been new forms that, the fossil record leads us to believe in evolution. This is not true whatsoever. What they do is examine rocks, and they see fossils within those rocks. And they say this should lead us to belief in evolution. So one thing that we have to keep in mind is if we examine the fossil record, it actually doesn't support evolution, but it negates evolution. Why is that? Because if we examine the fossil record, that organisms, forms of life, they appear in the fossil record fully, not half-formed, but fully formed. They appear abruptly in their final form. So what does that mean? That means that we think that there's one form of life that underwent many gradual changes, and it eventually evolved into something else. That means there's many transitionary forms, many middle forms, many intermediate forms. But if we examine the record, we don't see that. We just see fully formed organisms. And now, in fact, there's something that's called the Cambrian explosion. So they say in the Cambrian era, which is about 500 years ago, all these final forms, not half forms, but final forms that just appeared in the fossil record. But similarly, with evidently nothing, no other forms leading to it. So this all, it disproves or it negates the idea of evolution. Their biologist, Jeffrey Short, he said that we are in the dark about the origin of major organisms. They appear fully blown and ready to go, in contrast to Darwin's depiction of evolution with the accumulation of many minute changes. So these organisms appear fully blown, ready to go. So they're not half organisms. And now something similar to that. The third thing is that from any one form to get to another form, we would need how many middle forms? How many intermediate forms? Millions, maybe billions. How many of these intermediate forms in the fossil record? What logic would dictate is that the amount of intermediate forms we would find should be many, because to get to from any one final form, their final form, you need millions or billions of forms. So we should find many organisms like fish with half legs and like that. We should find many intermediate forms, but we've found none. So now none whatsoever. We only find final forms. So now there should be, the fossil record should be replete with these intermediate forms. So Louis Agassiz, a famous Swiss American biologist from the 19th century, he says that Darwin's theory rests on the assumption that exactly those forms dropped out of the fossil record, which were Darwin's conclusion. Louis Agassiz, the biologist, he says that why is it that just those forms have dropped out of the fossil, which would exactly prove Darwin's conclusion? Why is it that, shouldn't there be at least some there, and maybe the final forms have dropped out? But it's not like that. And these are just a few things to keep in mind. Now the question, why did he come up with this conclusion? This did not stem from an observed reality. He never observed one organism evolving into another organism. In fact, he just observed what's called microevolution, just adaptation to environment. He never observed macroevolution, the changing of one species to another. So the reason is because he was an atheist. And then they need an explanation. Because if person is an atheist, how are you going to have the world around you? How are you going to explain the universe? There needed to be something. That's why the famous atheist today, Richard Dawkins, he says that it's only after Darwin that a person could become an intellectually fulfilled atheist. Why? Because if you're an atheist before Darwin, you didn't have any explanation for how the world came about. Explanation for how creation came. But Darwin provided explanation. So what we see from this is that Darwin's explanation was reactionary. There's a reaction because he lacked an explanation. It was due to an observation of reality. He never observed actual macroevolution. So now Maulana Ashraf Ali Thanwi, one of the famous scholars of India of the last century, passed away in the 1940s. He says, basically the gist of it, is that Muslims don't need an explanation like Darwinism because we already have a much better explanation of the universe. Allah Ta'ala already told us how it comes about. So we understand from this that the very premise on which Darwin based his theory, which is that there needs to be some explanation from this, we need that. We don't require that because Allah has already given us an explanation of how I created Adam alayhi salam. We ask